I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. Well, John, it's so nice to be back having a cup of coffee, or like we said, tea, in your... Hey, by the way, John, did you ever drink coffee, or has this just sort of been a lifetime choice of tea?
I've been a lifetime tea drinker. I just enjoy tea so much. I don't know, maybe it's Irish heritage more than anything. But tea's always been big in my life, and I can drive my family nuts with my, you know, I feel like this is a English tea day or a British Irish tea day or a Peacock orange tea day or a decaf. I mean, there's so many choices and possibilities. Just kind of blend it to the moment. So I like it.
I don't know why I hadn't asked that before, but then I just thought to myself, gosh, I wonder if he's ever been really a coffee drinker.
Well, I don't know that we, you know, being teed is a little bit different than having, you know, coffee with John, tea with John, or I like this coffeed, you know, taking the verb, but noun making it a verb. Teed is a little bit different.
It is.
We
don't want to get John teed off, do we?
yeah, that's right. Don't date him off.
That's right. Well, hey, John, you know, I've been reading lately a number of pieces that I'm not sure how many people are talking about, because maybe it's just they hear so much about it that it sadly becomes white noise. And that has to do with the dropout issue in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a couple things I read I'd just love to get your feedback and your thoughts on. One is, you know, the state of North Carolina came out and they basically said, you know, look, our research is saying that there's been an uptick in the number of dropouts in our state. And they're trying to basically look at, you know, how, why, what, where, and what kinds of students are, you know, are there any trends to be able to identify? And one of the things they talked about that I don't read a lot about of, and I'm sure that, you know, it's sort of in your neck of the woods or on your discussion plate, just because it's the world that you live in, is this idea of the role suspensions play in an eventual dropout. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's something you don't typically hear in the popular media, is sort of how does a kid get to the point where they make the decision to drop out?
Wow, Rod, that is a big question and a good question. You know, to address firstly your thought about the role of suspensions in dropping out. Very rarely does the president of the student council drop out of high school, or the quarterback of the football team, or the head cheerleader, or the head of the science club. Now, those are roles that kids play that have a lot of visibility in the school community, in the high school community, and a lot of social status, and a lot of networking and adherence, keeping the student tied into the school. The kids who drop out are the kids who haven't become bonded in the school, in the values of the school, in the social network of the school, for the most part. There are always exceptions to every rule. But in those same kids who haven't been bonded to the school culture, been bonded to a particular teacher or a mentor or a club or an association or a sport that helps define them, those kids are kids who are more likely to be rule violators, live on the outside of the school culture, be the troublemakers, if you will, that wind up suspended or expelled. It's so those kids are much more likely to be high candidates for dropping out to begin with because of the things we just described. It's a bit of a truism for me. I've always found in my principalship days and always supported in my years in teaching the principalship and teaching the superintendency at St. Cloud State University, where I taught for many years as a tenured faculty member, that school administrators spend 90% of their disciplinary time on 3 or 4% of their kids. Every school has them, public schools, private schools, parochial schools. You have a group of kids that are going to be on the edge of all of that's where you're going to spend your discipline time and your focus.
That's
your energy.
A staggering number, if you think about it. I mean, I know you're talking in generalities, but I mean, that's a staggering number.
Well, when you roll it up, nationally, it certainly is. And I'm even maybe being a little soft on the size of it. Maybe it's really 5 to 10% of the of your you know your disciplinary time is spent on 5% of your kids, your students. And one of the other truisms that I think, Rod, and this is not research-based but more anecdotally based, and I would say anecdotally supported in my teaching, that if many times as an assistant principal, or if that's your role, or a principal, and you don't have an assistant, you're taking care of these things, discipline matters yourself, you would think, boy, if I could just take Bobby, Sally, Joe, and Hillary and swish them out of my school, it will be such a better school. They are creating much of the chaos or the negative behavior or whatever it is, however you would classify it. But I've always found, and anecdotally my many students and graduate students found, you ride for a couple of weeks a little bit better, but a new set of people rise up to become your biggest behavioral concerns. It's kind of like there's just roles to be filled in our society, and one of them is class clown, and one of them is troublemaker, and if those roles are already filled, the second rate class clown or the second rate troublemaker is overshadowed by the king, and then when the king goes away, then the second rate guy goes to the top. That's a little bit of just behavioral reality, administrative reality that we face. But Rod, suspensions are tough on kids, and it's obviously a violation of something that they've done. The zero tolerance attitudes that took root in the 90s and played into the 2000s deeply just made for lots of suspensions and expulsions. We needed, you bring a knife to school, there's an immediate consequence. I don't care if it was a pen knife that you used to clean your fingernails with. It's a knife. You pay the consequence. I don't care if your dad put that object in your backpack for you to give to your uncle after school. You brought it to school. You pay the consequence. Kind of public schools painted themselves into corners, kind of made it administratively expedient. But it made it also not always in the... there was no leeway that a principal or assistant principal could use their judgment and say, look, you're a good kid, you've never been a violation ever before, but you brought that penknife to school, and I don't care if you're on the honor roll, and you've got to be suspended for 4 days or 2 weeks or whatever the rules were in that district. And that was tough. That was tough, and we suspended lots and lots of kids. And suspension is a break in the relationship with the school that's there to foster and enrich them. It's a break in it. And the ultimate break to us is expulsion. When the deed done, bringing drugs to school, bringing a gun to school, physically hurting a teacher, they have to be dealt with harshly. They have to be, one, you have to have that strong line drawn that there are certain things that in our school society you do not do. Yet in many states, that even if you expel a student, they are still entitled to an education, and that's just a reality too, a legal reality. But let's back up without too much wandering over this cup of tea. One of the things, Rod, and this is, students don't have tracking numbers. You don't have a public school identification number in our society, in our system, and we can't use Social Security numbers for these purposes. But you go through an exercise often in schools where has Joe dropped out? Have we seen him? Did we call his home? Have we sent a truant officer out? Where is he? We don't know. The old idea of a truant officer going out to kids' houses or seeing kids at a shopping mall or walking around downtown who appear that they should be in school, that's very antiquated. Because of the mobility of our society, because of the opportunities in work study or kids who work, one thing about it's interesting, Rod. In California, they have for years, and I don't know if this is still in play, but they had always brag about a low dropout rate, because in California, a kid was not considered a dropout until he came to the school district and signed dropout papers.
So if he left but never signed the papers, then it didn't count.
That's correct. That's correct. So we're trying to get our heads around, much like we've kind of agreed to a national formula for counting graduates. Through the National Governors Association, I think we're in our third, fourth year of now understanding what the cohort rate is about kids who start in freshman year and graduate 4 years later. That's the graduation rate, crudely stated. There's lots of nuances on that. But one of the challenges in that is in and out migration. You know, we don't have a way. We're not very good in our nation tracking kids again. If someone's gone, if someone leaves the district, the family moved, we don't know if that student left the school district in Dayton, Ohio, and moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and did the student graduate on time? How do we count them in our cohort?
And so,
There's all types of complications.
If they're gone off the data sheet, it's almost like we've scrubbed that bad data, if you get my point, from the ledger. And then, like you said, there's a new class that comes in. There's a new group. Yeah, in North Carolina, they were talking, they said that black students' short-term suspension rate was triple that of white students, and American Indian students was 2.5 times greater. So back to your point, I mean, that's sort of a scary trend. And I know statistics can be misleading.
I know they can be, but I don't think they are. There's significant empirical research that indicates this. This isn't hard to research. This is data mining. It's not a soft number. It's a hard number. You line up race, you line up suspensions, you examine the numbers. The facts are incontrovertible. Black kids and non-white kids get suspended at a much, much higher rate, than white kids. And it goads me because it leads to dropping out. This conversation is about, it's an alienation, it's an excommunication from the community, and it repeated numerous times, the student just forms the attitude they might as well stay home, might as well drop out. There's more pressure now, and I think there'll be more pressure from the Office of Civil Rights to monitor this and to begin to put pressure on school districts not to suspend based upon, I shouldn't say based upon race. It's not like I'm going to suspend three Latino kids today. That's not the method or the mechanism that's going on in public education. What is happening is that the cultural differences, the differences in socioeconomic status, the differences in English language, differences in the language of the parents and the way in which the parents can interface with the school district, leave kids that are lower socioeconomic status, which is often non-white kids, just more vulnerable to being penalized from a suspension and inspection. Easier to violate rules that they don't understand or are not supported in their home, and then executing a behavior like that in school winds them up in trouble. It's a shame. And part of this, and I want to harken back to one other thing about the fact that I say communities, smaller school communities give more roles for each kid to play. A high school of 400 kids still has to have the things that are non-academic that bind kids to the building and to the community. And those are the things we talked about a little earlier. Student government, clubs, athletics, roles for them to play, identities for them to create and hold on to as they shape themselves, as they shape their relationship with their peer group, as they shape the relationship with their town and their community. So smaller schools have less dropping out, have more roles for kids to play, and a greater kind of emotional health in the building. Larger schools where anonymity is the rule of the day suffer from this, suffer from teachers not knowing kids' names as they walk down the hallway and seeing a violation and saying, "Hey, you," and not being able to say, "Hey, Billy," and know that child and know that child's family. That is powerful behavior management, if you will, and powerful community building when you know. And when you don't know, you're incredibly vulnerable to inappropriate behavior and more suspensions and expulsions.
Well, a very, very important topic that, you know, hopefully we're shedding a little bit more light on. Well, John, I'm glad we got to learn a little bit more about the history of your beverage selection.
Oh, right. It's about time to tee up again here. I'm through with this cup.
Well, on that note, John, I've had a great time talking about a very heavy subject, but once again, very appreciative of your expertise in this space.
Well, you're so welcome, Rod. I look forward to our next chat.
Thanks, John. Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.